My Head Between Your Shoulder Blades, written by Pinkish and read by Sunkit and Shash. And Until We Meet Again, Dean Parmfic, rated teen. Additional tags: post-canon, gentleness, implied/referenced homophobia, hope. I don't know, honestly these tags are not terribly useful. They just made me feel soft this morning, so I wrote something. Part 5 of the Dean Loves Parm More Than Anything series. Summary. Snippets of Dean and Parm after they get married.
I've seen enough, he says. I know exactly what I want. And it's this life that we've created, inundated with the fated thought of you. And if you asked me to, if you asked me, I would lose it all, like petals in a storm. 'Cause darling, I was born to press my head between your shoulder blades at night when light is fading.
They get married with inn and corn squirreled away in their pockets, close to their hearts. The room is probably full of people. There's definitely family there, friends, loved ones. But Dean and Parm don't really see them, because their eyes are trained on each other. The world around them fuzzes out into white noise, soft focus bokeh that swirls around their bodies, so that the only thing that feels real is each other. Dean slides a ring on Parm's finger, and Parm does the same for Dean. These rings will be a daily reminder of what they are to each other, but the signature on the piece of paper that ties them together in a system that now has to see them is what makes Dean cry.
It's what my heart just yearns to say in ways that can't be said. It's what my rotting bones will sing when the rest of me is dead. It's what's engraved upon my heart in letters deeply worn.
At work, a new colleague looks at his ring and smiles. You'll have to introduce me to the wife. Mine is always looking for new friends. And Dean forgot that people wouldn't know. He went from school, where everyone knows that the swim team captain is in love with his boy, to here, where no one knows who Dean Ratanan Chatpokin is, where Dean doesn't know who's dangerous enough to lie to. He begins, as he means to go on. The colleague doesn't talk to him in the lunchroom again.
'Cause outwardly, he says, I try so hard to make you laugh at me. And she does, she laughs as though she's not heard the joke 10,000 times before, and he adores her. He watches her get dressed as though she's hurtling through time. Oh, darling, please be mine, she promises to fight them all.
Parm collects queer kids at his bakery. It wasn't the plan. It's not like he decided to hire part-timers based on how gay they are, but he hires people when other places don't. Rainbows start showing up on the windows, little signs for others that this is a safe place. And it's not a gay bakery, but it's a queer place. Artists start displaying their work on his walls. Musicians sing songs about the loves of their lives in a corner decorated with greenery and soft lighting. Couples ask him to create elaborate sculptural centerpieces for their weddings that aren't quite weddings. Isn't it getting a bit excessive? Don't you worry that this will make some people leave? That a customer won't come in if they see the rainbows? Other business owners on the same street wonder and worry at Parm, their faces radiating patronizing care. The fear that it will stop customers from coming to their businesses is unspoken but apparent. Parm doesn't quite know how to answer those questions, because there are always people in his bakery. Maybe some people leave, but other people come inside. It's warm and bright and full of love. Couples hold hands above the table. His employees wear the clothing that makes them comfortable. Young teens walk in with wide eyes and leave with hope. It's worth losing a customer over.
And he curses at the world for leaving him behind, and he's fallen out of touch, and she is stronger than he's ever been, he knows. She brushes her hand through his hair, he's got so much fucking hair, and he holds her close just to keep the world at bay.
It's not always easy between them. There's a period of time when they live in the same house, but in different time zones. Parm leaves long before dawn, and Dean doesn't come home until after dark. They're awake when they're asleep, and they see each other only in the traces of their lives. Clothing in the laundry bin, half-eaten takeout in the fridge, a new shampoo in the shower, a heart sketched in the fog on the mirror. Those are hard months that bring back memories of other hard months, when they were together but apart, when Dean was sure, and was sure that Parm would become sure, but still had to wait. When Dean comes home and Parm is asleep, he crawls under the covers and presses his forehead in between Parm's shoulder blades, wraps his arms around Parm's waist, tucks his knees behind Parm's, and lets the rhythm of Parm's heart become a lullaby. When Parm wakes up and Dean is asleep, he twists himself around to watch Dean's face, weaves their fingers together, and counts the space between Dean's breaths in and out and in and out. He fits his palm against Dean's cheekbone and watches the muscles in Dean's face relax. They reach out for each other, but they're reaching across time and space for someone who isn't there yet, hasn't been there, will have been there before. They say, "I love you," in text messages and post-it notes on fridge doors, and whispered in the dark in the hopes that it will make its way into a dream, but it's not enough every day. They have the rings and the knowledge and the trust, but it still hurts. And it makes other things hurt more. A missed call, a forgotten chore, shoes out of place, a distracted response, the sound of someone else's laughter in the background of a phone call. Things that shouldn't hurt start to sting and stab and dig their way underneath skin. But Dean still presses his lips against Parm's skin, and Parm still has breakfast waiting for Dean. And Dean still sends flowers to Parm at the bakery. And Parm hires someone else to open on alternating days. And Dean leaves the office before dinner time, even when people whisper that he'll never get promoted with that attitude. And they shift their lives minute by minute until they share hours again. At the end of the day, Dean likes to take Parm's hand and lead him into the bedroom, likes to undress Parm and send him into the shower, likes to dry his hair and surround him in soft fabric, likes to rub honey-scented oil into muscles sore from standing and moving and working all day. Parm likes the way Dean's eyes turn soft when he cares for Parm, the way his mind can stop thinking about 1,000 paper-cut problems when it's focused on making Parm loose and warm and sleepy. Parm likes to lift Dean's hands from his sore calves and to place them on his hips, his chest, his jaw, his lips. Dean likes to taste sugar on Parm's tongue.
And when they're sure no one can, she'll turn to him and say, she'll turn to him and say, it's not fair, it's not fair how much I love you. It's not fair, 'cause you make me laugh when I'm actually really fucking cross at you for something.
Dean brings Parm's cooking to work regularly enough, the people stop bringing lunches on Fridays, because those are Parm days. He feeds his colleagues the food that Dean tasted from Parm's fingertips. They eat the food that Parm made with Dean's arms around him, with Dean's lips dropping kisses on his cheek. And some of them don't eat it, but others do. Tell your husband I say thank you. When do we get to meet him? It tastes like it was made with love. Some colleagues get invited over for dinner. The people who smile when Dean gets soft and gentle when he talks about his husband. The people who say, your husband, like it's normal, without choking on the gender. The people who ask about Parm before Dean brings him up. The people whose eyes widen in surprise when they realize that Dean has a husband, not because it's strange, but because it's familiar. These colleagues become friends, become allies who turn the air icy cold when someone new says something cruel and thoughtless, become part of the scaffolding of love and hope that Dean and Parm build around themselves.
And he will say, oh how unreasonable, how unreasonably in love I am with everything you do. I'll spend my days so close to you, cause if I'm standing here, maybe everyone will think I'm alright.
They catch Win and Team, not in Thailand, but when their schedules overlap 1 week in New York. Parm and Dean are there to help Parm's mother's restaurant, and Team is there to show up American swimmers. At least that's how Win explains it. They meet up with Win and Team in a bar tucked inside one of Win's hotels, and they watch Team lift his face up to Win for a kiss when Win joins them a few minutes late. Team's hand makes its way to the back of Win's neck, digs into the meat of his upper arm, pokes at his face, settles on his thigh. He laughs at their shocked surprise, cheeks pinking, even as he explains that it's easier to be like this here, where people don't really know him. Wynn's face still falls open, love and tenderness written in the slack of his jaw every time Teen leans into his space. They're still in love. They don't have rings around their fingers, but they each have the same chain around their neck. The same charm dangling underneath their shirts, cool metal against their hearts that no one else gets to see. Win slips them a key to a suite as he and Team rush off to an important dinner where they'll impress strangers and make plans on a grander scale than Dean and Parm do. Their lives are large in a way that suits them, even as it means the four of them see each other less often than they'd like. Dean and Parm make use of the large jacuzzi and the excessively expensive champagne Win left in the middle of the room. They get tipsy and giggly as they blow soap bubbles at each other's faces and soak the bath mat with water that splashes over the edge.
Christ, you'll be the death of me, and calm throughout his melodrama. She will turn and say, dear heart, it's me, it's me. You don't need to pretend to be someone you're not, cause it's not like I've never heard you fart and snore. And for some godforsaken reason, I'm still here, love, like I've always been before.
One of Parm's bakery kids has been sleeping in the back room, sneaking in and out for a couple of days before Parm notices. Their parents don't want them at home anymore, and Parm doesn't even have to ask Dean if it's okay before offering a room in their house. Dean comes home to a third person at their dinner table and quirks an eyebrow at Parm, not in judgment, but in a request for instructions. Parm's smile tells him to be himself, so Dean talks about how delicious Parm's food is, and the kid agrees, their eyes shiny with a youthful crush on Parm. In a week, they manage to get in touch with their cousin and move out of Dean and Parm's guest bedroom, but not before changing the shape of Dean and Parm's home. I liked having a kid here. I want to be a father with you. Not yet. Not now. But they start making plans. The end. Thanks for listening.
It's not fair. Oh, it's not fair how much I love you. It's not fair, 'cause you make me ache, you bastard. And he'll say, oh, how unreasonable. How unreasonably in love I am with everything you do. I'll spend my days so close to you, 'cause if I'm stood here, I'm stood here, and I'll stand here, I'll stand here with you.